noche ya cayó. Mira, la luna ya apareció. Thank you.
She's trapped in a circle of self-hate. How can it be? Miss Perfect lost at sea. Can anyone hear her? Please anyone help her? Cause the more she tries to hide herself, the more she falls apart. Those tears, fake a smile, straighten your back, yes, it's been a while. Since she ate what she doesn't hate, while she spat it out, reads her not aloud. She just wants to feel beautiful in a world that is so hateful. She's always waking up before sunrise, smoothie matcha tea, it's a good life. Everybody wants to be like her. Everybody wants to look like her. Your fears, just act tough, be an if it's not enough. Your mistake, just keep it fake, lying to their face. What they really hate is when you show them your weaknesses. They don't want any deepness here, so perfect face, perfect body, perfect smile, perfect life. Everybody wants to be like her. Everybody wants to look like her.
in my kiss. Fire in my body. Truth in my kiss. Fire in my body. Truth in my desert rose.
Sky. I can feel that in your soul. The more you reason, the more you're shown he's there. You can see the only way you're falling down is when you're looking everywhere. So far from this, you can live. So far from this, come on now, stay right here in the light, so that you won't walk away, away, yeah. Well, come on now, stay right here in the light, though your burden's all the way, away, yeah. Though your burden's all the way. Well, the thought of wandering down on this place of open road, you speak the very part, all your actions always show. How easily you sway, but easily he takes all these heartfelt cries and broken pride. Walks along this hill not far away. So far from this, you can live. So far from this, oh well, come on now, stay right here in the light, so that you won't walk away, away, yeah. Well, come on now, stay right here in the light, though your burden's all the way, away, yeah. Though your burden's all the way. Well, can you feel those arms around you? Well, can you see this place surround you? Well, can you hear the people calling? Well, I can see your fear. Come on now, stay right here in the light, so that you won't walk away, away, yeah. Well, come on now, stay right here in the light, though your burden's all the way, away, yeah. Well, come on now, won't you stay right here in the light, so that you won't walk away, away, yeah. Well, come on now, stay right here in the light, though your burden's all the way, away, yeah. Well, come on now, won't you stay?
Catch you. as fast as you can. You gotta hide, 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 hide till you can't hide no more. You gotta talk, 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 talk till you can't talk no more. You gotta bark, 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 bark till you can't bark no more. Gonna find, find. That's true. You know what I do. No, no, that is true. Yeah, you know it's true.
Chapter 8. For the prince, too, that morning began with grim forebodings. They might have been accounted for by his medical condition, but his misery was too ill-defined for that, which only made it the more tormenting. He was certainly confronted by clear-cut, painful, and galling facts, but his wretchedness went beyond anything he could grasp or call to mind. He realized that he could not compose himself on his own. He gradually arrived at the settled expectation that something special and decisive was going to happen to him that very day. The fit he had suffered the night before had been a minor one. Apart from a sense of depression, a certain heaviness in the head and aches in his limbs, he felt no particular ill effects. His mind was working with reasonable clarity, even if he was sick at heart. He got up quite late, and at once clearly recalled the previous evening. He also recalled, though not so clearly, being taken home half an hour after his fit. He learned that an emissary had already been over from the Epanchins to ask how he was. At 11:30, another messenger arrived. He felt pleased at that. Vera Lebedeva was among the first to visit and wait upon him. The moment she saw him, she suddenly started crying, but when the prince at once reassured her, she burst out laughing. He was quite suddenly struck by the powerful compassion of this girl towards him. He clutched her hand and kissed it. Vera blushed. "Oh, don't do that, don't," she cried out in alarm, swiftly withdrawing her hand. She left him soon after in an odd sort of embarrassment. Meanwhile, she had managed to tell him that her father had rushed off at first light to the deceased, as he kept calling General Ivolgin, to find out whether he had died in the night, and that she had heard it said that he would probably die soon. Lebedev himself came home after 11 and went to the prince, only for a minute, to inquire as to his precious health and so on, and rummage about in the cupboard. He did nothing else but moan and groan, and the prince soon dismissed him. But all the same, he had tried to ask a question or two about the previous night's seizure, though it was obvious he already knew all the details. Kolya trotted in after him, also just for a minute. He really was in a hurry, and his mood was one of gloom and disquiet. He began by bluntly insisting on an explanation from the prince of all that people had been concealing from him, adding that he had already found out almost everything the day before. He was profoundly shaken. With all the sympathy he was capable of, the prince related the whole story, establishing all the facts with absolute precision. The poor boy was thunderstruck. He was unable to utter a word, and wept in silence. The prince sensed that this was one of those moments which leave a permanent impression and mark a turning point in the life of an adolescent boy. He hastened to give him his own view of the matter, adding that, in his opinion, the old man's imminent death might be due mainly to the horror he felt in his heart of hearts at his own delinquency, and that it was not everyone who was capable of such feeling. Kolya's eyes began to glitter when the prince had concluded. "They're a rotten lot, Ganka, Varya, and Ptitsin. I'm not going to quarrel with them, but from this moment forward our paths lie in different directions. Ah, Prince, since yesterday I've learned a lot that was new to me. It's a lesson to me. I also regard myself as directly responsible for my mother. I know she's provided for at Varya's, but that's not the same thing. He jumped to his feet, remembering that he was expected, asked hurriedly after the prince's state of health, and on hearing the response, swiftly added, "Isn't there something else as well? I heard yesterday, I don't have the right, I know, but if you ever need a loyal servant for anything, he's standing before you. It doesn't look as if either of us is exactly happy, does it? However, I'm not prying, I'm not prying." He went out, and the prince pondered even more. Everybody was prophesying disaster. They had all drawn their conclusions. Everyone was looking as if they knew something he didn't. Lebedev was interrogating him, Kolya was making blunt hints, and Vera was crying. At length he gave up in annoyance. "It's my accursed morbid imagination," he thought. His face cleared when, soon after 1 o'clock, he saw the Epanchins coming in to visit him, just for a moment. With them it really was just a moment. Getting up from breakfast, Lizaveta Prokofievna had announced that they were all going out at once for a walk together. This notification was issued in the form of an order, abrupt, cold, and without explanation. They all went out, Mama, the young ladies, and Princess. Lizaveta Prokofievna at once set off in the opposite direction from the one they took every day. They all realized what was going on, and no one said anything for fear of irritating their mama, while she, as if to avoid any reproaches and objections, walked ahead of them all without looking back. At length, Adelaida remarked that there was no need to run when out for a walk, and they couldn't possibly catch up with their mother. "So then," Lizaveta Prokofievna abruptly turned round to them, "we're passing his house now, and whatever Aglaya may think, and whatever happens afterwards, he's not a stranger to us, and now that he is wretched and ill into the bargain, I, at least, am going in to visit him. Whoever wants to go with me can do so. Anyone who doesn't can walk on past. The path is clear." They all went in, naturally. The prince predictably hastened to apologize again for the vase and yesterday's scene. "Oh, that doesn't matter," replied Lizaveta Prokofievna. "It's you I'm concerned about, not the vase. So you realize now that there was a scene. That's what the morning after means, I suppose. Still, that doesn't matter either, since anyone can see that you're not to blame. Well, au revoir, then. If you feel up to it, go for a walk, and then have another sleep. That's my advice. If you feel like it, drop in on us as before. You can be sure once and for all that whatever happens and whatever transpires, you will still be a friend to the household. Mine, at any rate. I can answer for myself, at least." They all rose to the challenge and confirmed their mother's sentiments. They left, but in this unaffected eagerness to say something kindly and encouraging, there lurked a good deal that was cruel, of which Lizaveta Prokofievna was unaware at the time. In the invitation to visit as before, and the words, "mine, at least," there was an ominous ring. The prince tried to recall Aglaya. True, she had given him a wonderful smile on entering and leaving, but hadn't uttered a word, even when they were all declaring their assurances of friendship, though she had looked intently at him once or twice. Her face had been paler than usual, as if she had slept badly. The prince decided he would certainly go and see them that evening, as before, and glanced feverishly at his watch. Vera came in exactly 3 minutes after the Epanchin's departure. "Aglaya Ivanovna has just given me a secret message for you, Lev Nikolaevich." The prince fairly quivered. "A note?" "No, sir, a verbal message. She only just managed that. She asks you particularly not to stir from the courtyard for a single minute today, right up to 7 this evening, or 9 even. I didn't quite get it all." "But what for? What does it mean?" "I don't know anything about that. She just said to make sure and tell you."
"She said, make sure?"
"No, sir, not in so many words. She hardly had time to turn round and say it. It was lucky I ran up to her myself. But I could see from her face that she meant it, make sure or not.
She gave me such a look, my heart stood still. After further questioning, the prince's agitation increased, though he had learned nothing more. Left alone, he lay down on the sofa and began brooding again. Perhaps they're entertaining some guest till 9 o'clock, and she's afraid I'll get up to my tricks again in front of them, he concluded at length, and once more began glancing at his watch and waiting impatiently for the evening. The solution of the mystery came long before evening, however, also in the form of another visit, a solution in the form of a new, poignant mystery. Some half-hour after the Epanchins, Hippolyte entered his room, so weary and exhausted that without a word he literally fell into a chair, as if unconscious, and instantly burst into an unbearable paroxysm of coughing. He coughed till the blood came. His eyes glittered, and hectic spots reddened in his cheeks. The prince mumbled something to him, but he made no answer, and for a long time kept waving the prince away. At length he recovered himself. "I'm going," he brought out with difficulty at last, in a hoarse voice. "I'll see you home if you like," said the prince, half rising, then stopped, recalling the recent prohibition on leaving the courtyard. Hippolyte laughed. "It's not you I'm going away from," he went on, gasping for breath and coughing slightly. "On the contrary, I found it necessary to come to you, and on business. Otherwise I wouldn't have troubled you. I'm going there. And this time, I do believe it's certain. Kaput. I'm not looking for sympathy, I assure you. I lay down this morning at 10, intending not to get up until the time came. But I went and changed my mind and got up again to come and see you. That means I had to. I'm sorry to see you like this. You should have sent for me instead of giving yourself the trouble. Well, that's enough then. You've expressed your regrets, and that should cover the social amenities. Yes, I forgot. How is your health?" "I'm all right. Yesterday I was not very..." I heard. The Chinese vase caught it. Pity I wasn't there. Anyway, to business. Firstly, I had the pleasure today of seeing Gavrila Ardalionovich meeting Aglaya Ivanovna this morning at the Green Bench. I was amazed to see how silly a man can look. I said as much to Aglaya after Gavrila Ardalionovich had gone. "You seem not to be surprised at anything, Prince," he added, looking mistrustfully at the prince's impassive face. "Not to be surprised at anything is a sign of great intellect, they say. In my opinion, it could just as well serve as a mark of great stupidity. I didn't mean you, actually. I'm not having much luck in my expressions today. I knew yesterday that Gavrila Ardalionovich..." The prince stopped short, evidently embarrassed, although Hippolyte was annoyed that he had not been surprised. "Knew? Now there's a novelty. Still, there's no need to tell me. But you didn't witness the meeting this morning? You saw I wasn't there, since you were there yourself. Well, sitting behind a bush somewhere, perhaps. Still, at all events, I'm glad, for your sake, naturally. Otherwise, I might have thought that Gavrila Ardalionovich was the lady's preference. I beg of you not to speak of it to me, Hippolyte, especially using such expressions. Especially as you know everything already. You are wrong. I know practically nothing. And Aglaya Ivanovna certainly knows that. Even about the rendezvous, I knew precisely nothing. You say there was a rendezvous? Very well, let's leave it at that. Now, how can that be? You knew and didn't know? You say very well. We'll be right back.
To Un train